the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Well, staying at sea, but to a very different story, our next guest is one of Ireland's most accomplished offshore sailors. County Wicklow woman Pamela Lee is preparing for a massive 3,500 nautical miles solo transatlantic race while also running her business, Ripple Racing. Pamela, can I start by asking you how you ended up in the world of sailing?
Well, I guess it's the world of sailing is very big because you have everything. Well, like with a lot of sports, you have everything from just messing around in boats and dinghies to this like crazy world of high performance professional sailing that I'm in now. But it's all because my dad and my parents, or my dad is sailing mad. It's his passion, hobby, summer holidays and free time and everything like that was packed up in a camper van to a lake somewhere in Ireland and sailing, canoeing, messing around in boats and all that kind of stuff. So it's really been a part of my life from the start.
And your dad, because he was so into it, it was important to him that on those sort of trips, he would literally show you the ropes and show you how it was done.
Yeah, I think like important to him as in like I don't think we really had much of an option. If you wanted to be,
this is how it's going to be.
This is how it's going to go. Luckily enough, it's actually quite a fun activity. So yeah, and it was done in a really fun way. There was no like, I think, you know, you think of tennis parents and that kind of thing, but not at all like that. It was all about fun.
You say the crazy world of professional sailing. Does that mean you have to be a little bit crazy yourself to do it?
Probably. You do get in pretty extreme situations. Like you have to have a certain ability to deal with fear, I guess, with being uncomfortable, with being alone, with all of those things. So it definitely pushes on the extreme side of life.
You've sailed across the Atlantic 11 times. What was the first time like?
The first time was amazing. Each time is like a different adventure because the sea is never the same, the weather is never the same, the boats are never the same. You never know what's going to happen. So it's a totally different experience each time. But the first time definitely really sticks in my mind. And I can still remember now just like that feeling of being in the middle of the ocean and the kind of emptiness and freedom.
And feeling very small in that huge expanse, no doubt.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange combination of feeling. There's like a freedom in how small you are, though. And like the emptiness, I think some people, I've heard people say that they wouldn't like the feeling of the emptiness around you. But I actually really enjoy that feeling because sometimes on land it can be so busy. You know, we have, especially now, like social media, WhatsApp, just noise, people, to-do lists. And then when you're kind of out in the middle of the sea, that's just like, it's just emptied.
Having crossed the Atlantic so many times, you must have encountered some very rough seas and bad weather. And a few, have there been hairy moments?
Yeah, definitely. I think probably my hardest crossing was I was coming back the other way from the Caribbean back over to the Med. And when you come back, it's a different route. When you go across, you go southwards. So generally south is like warmer weather and so on. And then you get into the trades winds, which are kind of quite a predictable wind that kind of blow you across the Atlantic. But when you come back, you have to go north because you kind of follow the circle of the patterns of the wind. You have to go north. So you're going more into the North Atlantic. So it's always colder and you're more likely to get cold fronts coming across. It's almost a guarantee. So the weather is much denser and heavier and wild. And I was doing a delivery. I was bringing back, it was actually the first time I was really sailing a class 40, which is the type of boat that I'm racing now. So I actually had done the delivery to try and get experience in this type of boat. And we came back and it was just one of those things where there's a series of unfortunate events where we left a little bit late. We tore a sail, so we were a little bit slower. And it was kind of a series of three big weather systems kind of caught up on us, and we were just in these horrendous conditions in the North Atlantic where the boat just feels like you're sinking below the trough of each wave, 40 knots of wind, so you're minimized sail and there's just waves coming over the top and you're kind of just feeling like
scared?
Which wave is going to be the wave that knocks us over.
Were you frightened?
Yeah, I think I was at that one. And but I think fear is like an interesting word, because there's often times when I guess I would be scared sailing. And it's not necessarily always when you're crossing the Atlantic, because sometimes the weather is even wilder or just as bad when you're, you know, in English Channel. I think there's a difference between kind of a fear and anxiety, and different levels of fear, and whether the fear is like a genuine fear that you're going to die, or whether it's just like an anticipatory fear of something that's going to break, but you know that you have the skills and the probability that everything's going to be okay. You can have fear, but kind of manage it into a kind of adrenaline action and manageable sense. And I think a lot of that comes into how prepared you are before.
What would you say has been the toughest experience?
I think in 2023, I did my first Transat, the first Transat Jacques Vabre that I did. So it was the double-handed race. And it was my first time really skippering a project at that level. We were very tight on budget, so preparation was really intense and kind of last minute. And the weather was, for the start date is set like from way before. And they try to start everyone on that date because, you know, there's a huge fanfare, sponsors are coming, spectator boats, you know, it's like having a rugby match on a date. People have tickets. And this year there was an unprecedented, it was almost like the perfect storm. I don't know if you've seen that movie where there was a huge storm coming across the North Atlantic. Another storm coming across on top of it, and it was really getting next level, and they're kind of watching it. And so there was all this discussion before about whether, well, we thought we were going, so I was trying to mentally prepare the fact that we were going into this like ridiculous weather conditions, you know, and I'm responsible for me, for the boat, for my crew. And and at the same time, they're kind of debating whether to send the fleet or not send the fleet. And in the end, they took very drastic decisions, and they started some of the fleet, which included us, but forced a pit stop in Lorient because they didn't want to send us into the Bay of Biscay with that level of weather. So it was a real management of, on the mental side, because you're kind of getting ready to go. Am I going to go? I'm not going to go. And then you go, and the weather is insane and really, really tough. And then you stop, even though you've kind of mentally prepared to go for 20 days. So then you come in and do a pit stop. You kind of have to get ready and you go again. And the next time we went, there was also really, really tough weather. So I think that was definitely my toughest big learning experience, but definitely one of the toughest so far.
Is there any, on these long trips, is there any downtime really at all? Because you're working, it's literally all hands on, you're eating, you're sleeping. Do you get any time to mentally switch off and relax at all?
I'd say I wouldn't mentally switch off. No, I'm not unrelaxed. Not really. You're always slightly on. It depends. Often the long races, like if we're doing a transat race and it can be 18 to 20 days, there's different modes. So always the start, the first 24, 48 hours is always going to be very intense because it's the start. So you've got the adrenaline and you've got a lead up. All the boats are still very close together. Often you're still near the shore. So the navigational side of it is tricky and interesting. There's fishing boats, there's other stuff. So it's always very intense. And then it kind of depends on the weather and the situation. So for a transat race, at one point you'll get into the middle of the Atlantic. And so therefore, at that point, there's less things to worry about kind of hitting in terms of land and fishing boats and stuff like that. So that kind of calms down and it's a bit more stable. So there you can get into, I don't think you ever really turn off, but you might get into more of a rhythm, you know?
What's the food like, Pam?
A lot of freeze dry, which is like dehydrated meals that you kind of rehydrate with water because it's very, very light. And you can
but
get
they're
a
really
lot
delicious, aren't they, I'd say.
I can tell you that the texture is not incredible.
So mealtimes are quick. It's
yeah,
get the food
it's
into you and get
energy
on again.
It's definitely all about getting energy in. It's not, we bring treats. We do bring ourselves certain treats, but you're really like trying to maximize energy gain and what's going to last as well.
How do you heat them up? I mean, do you have to boil them in a boat that's moving all over the place?
Yeah, we have our kitchen is a jet boil. I don't know if you have jet boil, like it's a little system for boiling water in a canister. So it's kind of relatively safe, but there is still plenty of stories of accidents because, yeah, at the end of the day, the boat is flying around the place.
And bring a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, well, we have definitely fire extinguishers on the boat and everything.
Can you sleep well in those conditions at this stage?
The start is always, the first few days is always a bit harder, and I think it's often to do with the adrenaline and stuff and getting into the rhythm. But at a certain point, you're so tired that you close your eyes and you're out. You need to be putting alarms on to make sure you get back up again.
Next year, you're preparing for the Route du Rhum, which is a 3,500 nautical mile solo transatlantic race. Will this be your first time going solo, and how do you feel about that?
Yep, it will be my first time doing the solo transatlantic. I'm about to do my first solo race in 3 weeks, actually, in preparation. So there's a long lead time, which is good, because even if right now, if I think about it, I kind of go, oh God. But at least I know I have quite a lot of prep time. And also it's something I feel kind of very proud about, because for instance, in the last Route du Rhum, there was less than 5% of the skippers starting the race were less than 5% were female. So I said at that point, I would really love to be on the start line. So I'm really proud to be part of that. And I will also be the first Irish skipper to ever partake in the race as well.
Is it a fairly macho sport?
Yeah, definitely. It's really a very male dominated sport. And I think historically, it would be considered quite macho. But there's a lot of really positive change happening about that. And it's also, in my point of view, I think it's actually a really great sport for women, because it's an intellectual sport as much as anything, particularly when you're going offshore. Because, for instance, if you have a race of 20 days, you're not going to win that race because you hoisted a sail, you know, a few minutes quicker than the other person because you happen to be bigger or stronger or whatever. You're going to win the race because you made the right tactical decisions. Of course, occasionally there can be physical advantages for guys over girls. Not always, but it can be a thing. But mentally, I think it's really interesting because women are just as capable of intellectually bringing on that challenge. And I think also females can be really, really well prepared and do very well on long-term endurance sports. So even though historically, and in the figures, it is a male-dominated sport, I think it's actually a really, really interesting place for women to be.
And when it comes to the places that you've already been, Pam, and you've seen a part of the world that many of us would never see and in a different way, and it must change your perspective on the planet on which we live to sail in that way, such big distances. But where for you is a favourite place that you have been to? And what trip would you really like to make at some point in the future?
That's really tricky. I mean, I've sailed a lot in the Caribbean and around there. And obviously it's really exceptional with the blues and the colors, but also just being in the middle of the ocean. And sometimes the sun rises and the sun sets, and it sounds so simple, but just knowing that you're getting to be somewhere and see something and experience something that many people would love to experience. Maybe some people wouldn't, but not many people actually get to do. And also often you've worked hard to be there as well. So it's kind of like that double experience of being somewhere that's very special and unique, but knowing that you kind of worked hard to be there as well. I guess like getting to the top of a mountain or something. So that really kind of stands out. And often like, we do a lot of sailing around the... Oh, actually, no. I was going to say, we could do a lot of sailing around the west coast of France here, and often you go around lighthouses and they're just so kind of wild and ragged, and it's kind of romantic and inspiring. But I think actually that speaks very well to Ireland. And when I did the round, I set the round Ireland world record, and I can remember really clearly coming around the bottom quarter and going outside the Skelligs, and they're just, you know, like so wild and remote on this very west coast of Europe, off the edge of Ireland, where some monks lived. You can still see the little huts of the monks that lived there. And you just know that not many people go there, not many people pass there, not many people get to see it from that view that you're seeing it. And yet there's kind of still these remnants of humans or people who used to live there. So you can feel kind of like deeply connected to that kind of thing. And I think that's, you know, really inspiring.
It must be stunningly beautiful at times as well to be really right out there and surrounded by that expanse and even the wildlife as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And like it's a two contrast, because sometimes it's, you know, it's you're almost in the middle of a field of grey, particularly up here in the north. Like you kind of have a grey sea and a grey sky. And then other times it can be just so extreme and different, where you have a crystal blue sea that you can see until the horizon, and you know, a sunrise that's got all the reds that you can imagine. And there's been a few times where I've had really exceptional experiences with nature and wildlife. For instance, on that first transat I did, it was very, very flat and calm, so we were kind of in the middle waiting for some wind. So I went up the top of the mast, it's up the top of the mast of a 60-foot boat, just to kind of, well, to check everything, you know, to do a rig check and check everything was there, but also to have, you know, experience what it would be like to be at the top of the mast in the middle of the ocean. And while I was up there, just from the distance, I could kind of see this splashing in the water. And then I noticed that it was just a huge pod of dolphins dashing towards us from who knows where, because we were in the middle of the Atlantic. So how they knew there was a boat dashing towards us. And they came kind of coming from all angles and then just playing around the bow of the boat while I was up on the mast with this like perfect aerial view of all these dolphins around the front of the boat. And it's just kind of one of those experiences that you feel like you're like in the National Geographic.
Recently, you had a bit of an experience there with a cargo ship. What happened there?
I was luckily very close to a boat, and we were racing just the other week off the coast of France, in between France and England. And it's a very, very busy shipping area. The weather was pretty wild. It was pretty windy. There was about 3 meters of waves, and we were racing very close and pushing it. We'd already been out at sea for about 2 days, so already kind of tired, wet. And we were very close to another boat, kind of just coming off the back of a shipping channel. And then we heard a mayday call one time. Normally when you hear a mayday, it's kind of repeated. We heard a mayday call one time and then we kind of heard a silence. So straight away we were kind of concerned that there had been a collision between this cargo ship and the competitor. So we having heard the mayday, so we quickly dropped our sails and went back to see if we could identify what had happened and where the boat was. And we came across in the middle of the night in pitch black. There was no moon. In the sea state, we came across our competitor's boat, which has actually been split in half due to collision with the cargo ship. And the two sailors on board clinging to the back portion of the boat that was kind of just about floating with some very small lights and head torches and, you know, the boat completely demolished.
Wow, that was a very close one for those two sailors, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was really lucky that it was really because we were so close at the time that we heard them, because once the boat was ripped in two, essentially, by the cargo ship, they didn't have any of their normal communications. They just had a small handheld VHF. And with a small handheld VHF, the signal doesn't travel very far. I think the rescue services would have found them eventually, but it definitely would have taken a much, much longer. And you start to think about hypothermia and all these different types of things, and if the boat was going to sink even further and they didn't have a life raft, and also drifting back into the shipping channels with more cargo ships coming when they don't have any of their AIS or lights, you know, you can imagine the risks.
Extremely dangerous, yeah. When you're in a difficult situation and maybe it's weather, maybe it's things going wrong, you've got the pressure of the race, you've got perhaps even your own safety and the safety of others to think about, and stuff's not going well. How do you hold it together mentally? How do you get through that?
Well, that's a work in progress. and I was talking about this actually just this morning with the mental coach. The thing about it's almost a luxury when you're offshore, because when you're offshore in the sailing boat, like there is actually nothing else there. All you have is what's in front of you and the situation that you are in. You can have a moment where you kind of go, and you maybe have a little bit of panic or a little bit of fear or a bit of that overwhelm, like, rides up. But at the end of the day, it's literally not going to solve anything. So when you're offshore and kind of when you're on the boat, there's not really any option but to deal with what is right in front of you and kind of just get on with it. But sometimes I like to try and use that or apply that when I'm on shore as well and kind of just try to close out some of the other noise and get on and deal with the things that are right in front of you. And I think we can often underestimate what we can do when until we're actually in the situation, until you put yourself in a situation you don't know, you might underestimate your ability to deal with it.
You live in France, Pam. Do you enjoy that?
Yeah, I do really enjoy France. I'm in the west coast of France, in Brittany, which, I mean, I've always lived and traveled abroad a lot. But funnily enough, the west coast of France has actually got a lot of similarities to Ireland. There's a very Celtic culture here. So they have that Celtic cultural, they love Celtic music. So they actually, everyone here, whenever someone hears that I'm from Ireland, they, oh, we love Ireland. So that's really nice. So there's a little bit of like that home
that
connection
helps
here. Yeah, and we're still on the Atlantic coast. So the weather is a little bit better, but we still have that kind of diversity of weather and there's really good conditions for sailing, surfing, kiting. And France is, I mean, I enjoy the country a lot. It's really nice. I like croissants and pain au chocolat. And it's really cool. It's not so far from Ireland. So often I have friends or family who might come over on the ferries and visit or back and forth. So it's quite cool. It feels quite close to home.
You make it sound like crossing on the ferry is very dull after talking to you about sailing for a while.
Yeah, definitely. It's a great place. I highly, highly, highly recommend it for summer holidays.
Pamela Lee, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thanks a million.